Good morning, class. Today we do the theory of everything. So very quickly, I will explain to you what science tells us about where we came from, who we are, and where we're going. So as you may know, it all started with a Big Bang. Okay? The Big Bang. So in the beginning, there was a massive ball of energy, and then it exploded. Okay? And because of this explosion, it would create stars and planets and black holes and solar systems. And that's how the universe was created, through the Big Bang. Then we had the Earth, and on Earth, life evolved, starting with plants and sea life. And then we had lizards, mammals, and then we got to humans. Okay, so evolution. The thing about evolution that's very important to understand is that it's all about mutation. So the genes will randomly mutate, and then those genes that are best adapted to the environment will survive. Okay? And this is the idea of the survival of the fittest, introduced to us by Charles Darwin. Okay? And that's how we came to dominate the planet, because we are the fittest, because we're able to work together, because we have language, which allows us to store knowledge and pass it on to future generations to accumulate new technology. Okay? So that's the theory of evolution. Now we get to the human mind. Right? The human mind is unique in the universe. It allows us to communicate with each other. It allows us to imagine things. It allows us to be creative. And so neuroscience teaches us that our brains, what we our brains do is we filter experiences into memories. Now, if you take psychology, you will know that there's long-term memory and short-term memory. Short-term memory is just what you have today. Long-term memory is what stays in you, okay? So what the brain does is that it differentiates between short-term and long-term. And then this long-term is stored into a database of memories. And it's divided according to your emotions, okay? Happy, sad, angry, scared, okay? So there's a rainbow of emotions, and all your memories are stored according to the different emotions inside your brain, the database of your brain. And from this, you're able to create an identity. Identity is basically an understanding of who you are, your place in the world, and how you should best navigate the world. Okay? So the idea of identity. Now, what you also learn in psychology is it is possible for you to create many different identities. So in a school, you're a student, at home, you're a child, at work, you're an employee, okay? And all these identities put together is called the worldview. And you can understand this as your personality. Okay? All right, so this is all that science knows. I mean, this is pretty simple, but this is what science tells us about where we came from, who we are, where we're going. Now, there are three distinct characteristics about the scientific worldview that's very important for us to understand, okay? The first is that this is all random. Okay, this is really important. Because before, we understood this as design, okay? Before, we believed that there was a God, Now we believe there's no God. All this is just random. That's the first thing I need you guys to remember. Second thing I need you guys to remember is that it's all material. Before, we understood the universe as spirit, mainly spirit, but now we understood it as mainly material, things that we can see and touch. If we cannot see it, if we cannot touch it, if we cannot measure it, it does not exist. And the third characteristic is that it is emergent. Emergent, which just basically means bottom up. You have like these particles, they become atoms, then the atoms become matter, they become stuff, and then we become chairs or people, okay? So it's all emergent. And so these are the three major principles of our worldview today. And you should have learned most of this in science class. Now, there's a problem with all these theories. All right, so I'm going to go over them one by one. And I want to make sure you follow along, okay? Because what I will do now is I will show you the problems, the deficiencies, the flaws in all these theories. Okay, so let's start with the Big Bang. Now, if it is true that the universe started off with a Big Bang and it just expands slowly, then it should expand linearly, okay? But what we see is this. First of all, the universe, it expands weirdly, okay? It's more like this. So as it expands, different parts move faster than other parts. That makes no sense. Also, certain galaxies, okay, galaxies move faster than other galaxies. This makes no sense either. So, the way that astronomers have explained away these statistical problems is to introduce a new concept called dark energy. And dark energy is most of the universe. It's like at least 80%. Some scientists believe it is 90%. So most of the universe is composed of dark energy. And of course you're like, what is dark energy? And the answer is, we don't know. Now, dark energy sounds like we don't see it. That's not what it is. It's we don't know what it is. And quite honestly, it's cheating, okay? So let me give an example. Let's just say you take a math test. And the teacher asks you 1987 plus 25, and your answer is 20, okay? That's obviously wrong, right? So your teacher says, this is wrong. And then you say, oh, I know how to fix this, plus dark energy. Problem solved. Okay, this is like literally what cosmologists are doing with dark energy. We don't know what it is, but they say it must be there because otherwise we cannot explain these statistical inconsistencies in our measurements and modeling. And then of course you're like, well, why don't you just say that the Big Bang Theory is wrong? And they're like, well, we could say that. The problem is we don't have a better model. Well, in fact, there is a better model. The better model is there are different Big Bangs, okay? So if you just assume that there are different Big Bangs, well, this helps us understand what's going on better. But then the question then is, wait a minute, if there are multiple Big Bangs, why are there multiple Big Bangs? Okay? So our current system of understanding the universe simply does not work. And the problem is that it's become a paradigm, a story that is accepted by most scientists, and they refuse to budge on this issue. Okay, but I'm telling you right now that this system is clearly problematic, and it could be wrong. Okay, so that's a problem with the Big Bang. Now let's move on to evolution. Evolution. Now, in theory, evolution does work, and it works for most animals, except when it comes to human beings. Okay? Because that the idea of evolution is gradual progress. But we don't know how we went from the ape, okay, to the human. We share with the ape, other monkeys, 99.9% of DNA. But we don't know why we're so different from the ape. Okay? That's the first problem. Second problem is humans have been around for about 200,000 years. Okay? That's a long, long time. We only have maybe 50,000 years of history. So where do the other 100,000, 150,000 years go? We don't know. Okay? So this is also another huge problem with the theory of evolution. The third problem is, according to evolution, there should be many different types of human beings. But in fact, there's only one, Homo sapiens. Now, what scientists will tell you is, well, before there were different species, the Neanderthal, the Cro-Magnon, and then gradually Homo sapiens took them over. And that's, and you can believe that, but it's problematic because according to evolution, there should be many, many different types of humans, okay? Maybe some with six fingers, some with three eyes, like animals. Okay, so the lack of diversity in the human species, it doesn't really fit into the evolution model, okay? All right, so that's the problem with evolution. The real problem is with the human mind, okay? So let's go over some of the problems. All right, so with neuroscience, what they teach you is that what the worldview does, that's very important, is that it filters memories. Okay, the reason why is every day you're absorbing a lot of experiences. If your brain were to absorb all the experiences, your brain would explode because there's too much information to process. Therefore, your worldview processes different experiences. It differentiates between experiences that are important and experiences that are not important. And experiences that are important, of course, goes into your long-term memory. The problem with this is, how about babies? In theory, babies should not have a worldview. They should not have a personality. But if that's the case, then how do they process memories? How do they know what memories to store, what memories not to store? Okay? The other thing is that I have three kids, and I can tell you that they're all distinct personalities. It seems as though they were born with a worldview. And then the question then is, where does this come from? Your eye color, your hair, your height comes from your parents' DNA, right? So does is your personality from your parents' DNA? Probably not, okay? Just ask yourself, am I a composition of my parents' personalities? You're not. You're a different person than your parents. So this is a huge problem with this model. Where does the personality come from? And why is it embedded in us from the very first day? Okay? What's more problematic is how we think. Consciousness. We do not have currently a model for how we think. In fact, if you study neuroscience, you will find there are a lot of gaping holes in our understanding of the brain. For example, we do not know where the brain stores memory. That's very unusual because a memory is a building block of everything. But we don't know in the brain where it is stored. Yeah? Excuse me? No, the hippocampus? No, it's not. We don't know where it's stored. There are certain things, this that we know where it's stored. For example, we know where maybe language is stored. We know where faces are stored, okay? So maybe the faces are stored in the hippocampus. But we don't know where memory is stored, okay? So what we say is the entire brain stores memories. But that's another saying, we don't know where it's stored, all right? So the other thing is that our current model of the brain, it's like a city, okay? Think of the brain as a city. And what makes the brain work are the roads, or what we call the synapses. When they hit each other, it creates electricity. And that's where we think that how thought is generated, okay? But this is problematic because we think a lot, okay? So let me give you an example of this to clarify. Now, in science class, you're taught the scientific method. Okay, what's the scientific method? Well, you do research. You create a hypothesis from the research, and then you create an experiment to test out the hypothesis. And then you have data, and then you make observations, and then you refine the hypothesis, okay? And this is what we believe a way to model the act of thinking. And you're taught this in every class, even in English class, right? You do research, then you create an outline, right? The outline has a thesis with three evidence, right? And then you write it out, write a draft, you edit it, and you repeat the process. Okay, this is what you're taught in school. Okay. I'm going to say something that will shock you, okay? This is what you're taught in school. This is what you believe works. But as someone who is much older than you are, as someone who actually thinks for a living, who teaches for a living, who writes for a living, I'm going to tell you, how you actually think is the complete opposite. Okay? So what happens is you actually think or imagine the story or the idea to begin with, okay? And then you start working backwards to create the process. You're taught in school, it's a process that creates the idea. What I'm telling you is that in reality, it's the idea that creates the process, okay? So let me give you an example of this. If you look at every major scientific discovery, it all came to the person in a dream or when he was, or it sort of popped into that person's head, okay? It's just think of a light bulb popping up, okay? So an example is Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein created his theory of relativity not in a laboratory, not by doing research with other scientists, but simply by sitting in a patent office every day and just daydreaming. And then, boom, the idea came to his head. He's like, okay, now I have this idea. Now what he's going to do is go back and look for the evidence to support his idea. Yes? Okay. Is a hypothesis the idea? Okay. No, the hypothesis is the assumption. Okay? What I'm trying to tell you is this. What I'm trying to tell you is the idea or the final product comes first. Then you go backwards. Okay? And you create the draft. Then you create the outline. Then you do the research. Okay? Now, I know this sounds weird, but let me give more examples. James Watson came up with the double helix model of DNA. How he did this was he spent years and years working to figure out how DNA worked. And then, boom, one day he had a dream of a staircase, a double staircase. And he's like, maybe that's the model I need to use. And then he started to do more research and he discovered, hey, this works. Okay? But the question then is, how did that get into his head? Okay, let me give you another example. I write books, and I've written 3 novels. And you won't believe this, okay, but my wife is here, and like she knows how I work. You would think that when you write a book, you would spend every day at the desk and read books, take notes, and then transform it into a book, right? I don't do that. What I do is I lie in bed and I might play some video games or I might read a book, okay? I get up, I walk to the park, and I come back and I have all these ideas. And I write down all these ideas over 1 hour, 2 hours on the computer, okay? And then I'm exhausted. I've run out of ideas. And I'm like, okay, tomorrow, what am I going to do if I have no ideas? I can't write anymore. But what happens is the next day, I get up and I have new ideas. And I write it back and I write it down again, okay? So it's not like I am generating these ideas. It's more like I'm receiving these ideas. If you actually watch me work, it is almost impossible to think that I actually do any work, because I'm always like lying around or walking around or daydreaming, okay? My wife tells me that when I write or when I work, it's like I'm possessed. I'm possessed by something, okay? Meaning like I don't see anything and I really don't know what other people are doing because I don't care. I don't care because I'm focused on my work, okay? Also, I'll give you another example, the way I teach. Now, when you see me teach, you think, oh, you must have a script. You must have outlined the class. I don't do that. I have a conception. I have a framework in my head. I come to class and I teach. How do I teach? I watch your observations. I watch your facial expressions. And based on your responses, I then start to flesh out the framework. And how do I do that? Because I'm always accessing a higher force and I'm receiving this information that I can then articulate to you in class. And that's why if you have been with me for a long, long time, 10 years, you will know I've never taught the same class ever. You can go on YouTube and watch all my videos. I teach this class different each time, because each time what I'm doing is I'm channeling a higher force and bringing it to you. But it is a conversation. It's a dialogue. And it's no different from reading a book or seeing a great painting, okay? Each experience is unique because a painting or the book, it's almost like a platform for you to experience the divine or higher power. Okay? When you read a great book, that's literally what you feel. You feel as though you are in conversation with the universe. And this book is really a portal into the universe. Okay, if you read a good, great, great book. I'm not sure if you had read a good, great book, okay? So, if you want to really be creative, you have to trust the universe. If you really want to destroy your creativity, you follow this system. Okay, so what I'm telling you, and I know this is going to be weird, but school, it destroys your creativity because it teaches you a process that does not work. No scientist in the history of humanity has ever come up with a great idea using the scientific method. I guarantee you. They've all came up with a great idea through their imagination, through their intuition, by channeling the divine. Okay, that's every single scientist, including Einstein, Newton, yes? Can you speak to them?
Okay, so I agree with what you're saying, but I personally think scientific method is more like how these inspirational ideas are being presented to others.
Oh, yes. Yeah, good point. Exactly. That's exactly correct, okay? So I use scientific method in order to convince other people that I'm correct. You're absolutely correct. Because if I told people, oh, I had a dream, well, like, it's not convincing, okay? So the scientific method, it's a way for us to communicate and spread ideas. You're absolutely correct, okay? But as I say, You will never, ever have a great discovery by following the scientific method. You have to have an inspiration. And then use that scientific method to explain your inspiration to other people. Okay? Yeah?
And another thing, sorry, and another thing is that I think how people absorb ideas or like how you wrote a book is based on your, at least some of the points are based on your experience, because let's just say a person has born and he never, like, he has no knowledge and he has no experiencing on anything, and I don't see the possibility for him to just observe this energy out of nothing.
Okay, you're exactly correct. Yes. And I'll explain this as we move on, okay? All right, but I want to show you there's lots of issues with how the scientific method is taught in school, okay? So, but are you guys clear? All right, but that's a good point. Let me continue. All right, so let me continue. We have so much evidence that we communicate with a higher power all the time. All right, so let's go over some of the evidence. Okay, the first piece of evidence is near-death experiences, NDEs. Near-death experiences are when you almost die, okay, or you're dead for like 10 seconds or 10 minutes, who knows. But there are thousands, tens of thousands of these testimonies on YouTube, and they all say the same thing. When they die, they see a tunnel, and at the tunnel, there's a light that draws them. Okay, they go, and then suddenly they are high up, and they feel tremendous love, peace, forgiveness, compassion. It's all good. And then they submit to a life review. They have a chance to reflect on their entire life. They can see all the pain they caused. They can see all the good they've done in the world. And then they're asked by a higher force, and it's like God or an angel, but like there are different interpretations, okay? Do you want to go back? And they always say, yes, I need to go back. Why? Because I need to tell people about my experience. And they come back extremely changed people. And again, these are people who don't know each other. And maybe before they were atheists or just scientists. But once they have these experiences, it changes them forever, okay? So near-death experiences, we have problems explaining why this is the case. Second is the idea of psychedelics. Okay, psychedelics. So throughout human history, every culture has used psychedelics, because psychedelics were a way for shamans or priests to access the divine. And what's really interesting is when you use a certain type of psychedelic, you end up seeing the same images regardless of who you are. Okay? And that's why civilizations throughout human history, what's amazing is if you go back to the ancient past and you look at different civilizations in different parts of the world, they have very similar statues and paintings. Okay? So what's a very common motif is the idea of the cosmic serpent. For whatever reason, every early civilization has worshipped a serpent, or serpent. The serpent is a very important part of their culture. And it's possible that when they're on psychedelics and they're meditating, they see a serpent talking to them. And they see that as the serpent of life, okay? And also, what's really interesting is the serpent, it's almost, it looks like the DNA. Right? Okay, so that's really, really interesting. Okay. Meditation. When people meditate, when you go up to a higher dimension, you end up having the same experience as psychedelics and near-death experiences. Also, great books. I myself have never done psychedelics. I obviously can't go back in the past and study these civilizations. I never had a near-death experiences, but I've read Dante. I've read Milton. I've read Homer. I've studied them very, very closely. And what's amazing to me is they say the same things. When Dante, in his Divine Comedy, when he describes the universe, when he describes God, when he describes the heavens, it's almost as though he's describing a near-death experience. Even though we have absolutely no evidence that Dante himself had a near-death experiences. Okay? So this is shocking. Okay, so there's a lot of evidence that there's a higher force beyond us. So the spirit world does exist. Again, I can't prove it exists, but there's a lot of evidence to suggest it does exist. Okay, so now the question then is, if our current model of reality doesn't really work, what is another possibility? Okay, and in this class, I'm not trying to tell you what is true, but I'm just trying to present to you new possibilities. So what I'm going to do now is I will present to you a new possibility of how reality is structured. Okay? All right. So to begin, let's talk about Kant. Immanuel Kant was the greatest philosopher who ever lived, the most influential philosopher who ever lived, because he introduced us the idea that we are not observers of reality, we are participants in reality. All right? So let me explain what he means. For Kant, there's a noumena. The noumena just means reality that is outside of us, the things in themselves. What he tells us is we can never know the noumena. We can never know this reality. Why? Because whenever we see reality, we filter it using time and space. Okay? So time and space do not exist outside of us. They are part of us. We use time and space in order to interpret reality in a way that allows us to make sense of it. Okay? So the noumena for time and space becomes the phenomena. And that's all we see, the phenomena, the things that are to me, not the noumena, the things in themselves. Okay? And so we imagine reality, we hallucinate reality. Okay, but of course, this creates three problems. Okay, the first problem is, what is the noumena? The second problem is, why do we have these filters, time and space? And the third problem is, how can we guarantee that what I see is the same as what you see? Because if reality is a subjective experience, then in theory, everyone should see it differently. But we all see it the same, okay? So why is that? So these are the three problems. And so what happens is that Hegel comes along, okay? Hegel, another German philosopher, and he explains the idea of the Geist. So what he's saying is that the noumena, it's really the spirit world. It's the Geist. And when you do this, it solves all three problems, okay? The noumena you can never access because it's beyond us. It's the Geist that gives us time and space. And as a result, because it's all coming from one source, we see the world in the same way. Okay? All right. So, this sounds complicated, but let me now use quantum mechanics to explain what this means, okay? Let's talk about quantum mechanics. Okay, so in science class, you're taught the Niels Bohr model of the atom. Okay? It's a simple model. You have the nucleus, and then around the nucleus, you have these electrons that orbit the nucleus. Okay? You're taught this in physics class. If you are in a more advanced physics, you were taught that it's actually an electron cloud. Why? Because we never know for sure where electrons are. So we can only know the probability of where they are in orbit. Okay? So it's called an electron cloud. And this is what you're taught in school. When you go to university, you will be taught this is completely and utterly wrong. Why? Because this assumes that these atoms are matter. They're solid. But in reality, if you go deep enough, you will find that they are actually just vibrations, what we call quantum fields. And they are just vibrations. And what the electron really is an intersection of these quantum fields. Also, these quantum fields can always exist in two states. The first is as a wave. The second is as a particle. Okay? And we can only know if it's a wave or a particle by observing it. And this is what's called a wave function collapse. In other words, all of nature is vibrational. It's energy. And it's only when we observe it, when we interact with it, that becomes something solid that we can see and measure and touch. Okay? It's called a wave function collapse. Okay? So, this is complicated. So, physicist named Ernst Schrödinger, he creates a thought experiment called Schrödinger's cat. Okay? You may have heard of it, Schrödinger's cat. And so imagine a box, and inside is a cat. And then the cat, inside the box is also some toxic chemicals that may or may not break. If it breaks, the cat dies. If it doesn't break, the cat's still alive. And what Schrödinger teaches us is that when the box is unopened, we can never know the state of the cat. It's only when we open it can we know it's dead or alive. But before then, it's both dead and alive. Okay? That's simple to understand. But then another physicist introduced a new concept called the Fren experiment, or Wigner's Fren. And this is more complicated because he says, okay, if you are the experimenter and you open a box, you now know the state of the cat. But what if you're a Fren? Okay? You don't see the box. You're outside the laboratory. When the experimenter opens the box, does the wave function collapse? And the answer is, it does not. Okay? It does not. And what this is telling us is there is no objective reality that exists outside of you. When the experimenter opens the box, the wave function collapses for him, but does not collapse for the observer and for anyone else. We have to open the box ourselves in order to see if the cat is alive or dead. Okay? But what if this person tells us, the answer is, it still doesn't collapse. We have to participate in the reality ourselves. And what this is saying, okay, this is hard to understand, is that everyone lives in his or her own reality. Everyone has a unique universe onto himself or herself. And that's what quantum mechanics teaches us. Okay? All right. So now let's try to, based on all this, okay, Kant and quantum mechanics, create a theory of reality. Okay? So what's important to understand is that everything are just vibrations. Okay? That's all it is. It's vibrations. Yeah?
But I thought like quantum mechanics can only be applied on quantum, whereas we are a macro creature that is not like...
Yeah, that is correct. But quantum mechanics is the basis of reality, right? Okay? So everything are just vibrations. Now, what happens is that what we need to understand is that if it's vibrations, if it's energy, it's also information. Okay, does that make sense? All right? So what our brains do is our brains are not independent. Our brains connect to the universe, okay? So as the universe is vibrating, we're receiving information. And then through our experiences, okay, this vibration allows us to turn it into memories. You understand? We're taking this vibrational information, we're taking our experiences, we're combining to memories. Now, this is really important. The memories now go back to the vibrational force. So our memories are connecting to the universe, and they're being stored in the universe. They're being imprinted in the universe. It's an imprint. And this, and of course, is no different from the internet, right? On the computer, whatever you write is being stored on the internet. So whatever you do is going to change the internet. And you receive information from the internet, okay? So you're participating in the internet, and you're part of the internet. Okay, and the same thing is happening here. Okay? So everything's vibrational. If it's vibrational, it's information. We take the information, and we combine it with the experience to turn into memories. The memories then go back to the universe. And so it's as though we can implant ourselves into the universe. Okay? Now, this is hard to understand. So what we've done is every single culture has turned this knowledge into a story that is easy for people to understand. Okay? So I'm going to tell you this story. And this story, this framework, I'm actually using Dante. Okay? All right. Dante. What does Dante tell us about the universe? Okay. Just a monad. The one God who knows. Okay? But it's a source of everything. And so what he does is he vibrates. He emanates. He thinks. He breathes. And this creates vibrational force, right? And this vibrational force creates new forces called dyads. Dyads are pairs. And when the pairs come together and vibrate, they create new things, okay? So this is how creation happens, through vibration, through the combination of different forces. Okay? Now, what's important to understand is that as the dimensions go lower, the frequency decreases. So at high, it's really fast, right? It's like, ah! Okay? When it goes low, it becomes low frequency. Oh, okay? And eventually, you get a point where matter can be created. Okay? So this is spirit. This is matter. And this is the world that we live in. Okay? So now the question then is, why is the universe set up in this way? And it has to do with the fact that the universe, the monad, strives for newness, for imagination, for freshness. The problem, though, is that in the spirit world, everything is perfect. Everything is eternal. Everything is immutable. And so by definition, you can feel no pain. You cannot suffer. You cannot make any mistakes. Therefore, you cannot have any new experiences. Therefore, you cannot have any imagination. So we humans exist in order to solve this problem. We humans are corporeal, which all it just means is we have bodies, okay? If you have bodies, you get old. You bleed. You get hurt. You fall down. Okay? You feel anger. You feel hate. But this allows us to have an imagination. And the imagination allows the universe to grow, to expand, to vibrate. Okay? That's our function. To have experiences that are new, which expands the consciousness of the universe. The universe itself is consciousness. All right. So, for this system to work, there have to be some guiding principles to this universe. The first and most important principle is the principle of free will. Without free will, this system cannot work. If you do what you're supposed to do, you can't have imagination, okay? So you have to disobey. You have to make your own choices. You have to make your own mistakes. And this is what allows the universe to imagine. Okay? But the problem then is, if you have free will, how do you know you're doing good? How do you know you're doing evil? And the answer is the idea of love. Okay? So the monad is the totality of love. We are a part of the monad. Okay? We're part of the monad. And so there's a spark of the monad in us called love. And so when we do good, we feel good. Because the love, the spark, is growing in us. And it's almost like a magnet. Okay? We want to return to the monad. And so we do good because it makes us feel good and allows us to return to the monad. But sometimes, because we live in a world of free will, we make mistakes. Okay, we might hurt someone, or we might traumatize someone. In which case, we feel anger, and then this becomes a vicious cycle. Okay, so now there's another system set up to ensure we don't get trapped by our hate, and this system is called death. Okay, in this system, death is released. It prevents us from forever making mistakes. Because you could have a terrible life, right? But it's okay because then you go die, you go back into the universe, and now you can observe everything that you did, okay? You can see all the pain you've caused, you can see all the good that you've done. And so you become wiser. And then you come back and you live another life. And again, you can make the same mistakes over and over, but you can also improve, okay? Now, the other thing to remember about the system is that it's our choice whether to create love or hate. Now, love goes back to the monad. But what happens when you create hate? Well, you need to store it somewhere, so it goes into lower dimensions, okay? Hate. All right? So we create new dimensions through hate, through anger, through fear, through bad emotions that cannot return to the spirit world because the spirit world is perfect. And so this is called hell. And this is called heaven. Okay? And this is how the universe is set up. Okay? So I'm just taking the literal reality and turning it into the metaphorical reality, which becomes the basis of all early religions. Okay? So there are different metaphors that we can use to understand this system, but let's look at one from Hinduism and one from Dante. Okay. So in Hinduism, there's a metaphor that's very powerful, and the metaphor is that in the house of the god Indra. Indra is one of the most powerful gods of India. There's all these pearls that float, okay? And what do pearls do? They reflect other pearls. And what happens is this. Because there's a spark in us, if one of our sparks grows bright, all the other pearls grow bright as well. Okay? So literally, because God is inside of you, because there's a spark inside of you, because you're capable of love. When you do love, you're capable of changing the entire universe because your love expands outward and your love reflects in other people as well. Okay? So Dante uses the idea of mirrors. There's a candle, there's a flame, and we're all mirrors that reflect the candle. Okay? God's the candle, we're just the mirrors. But every one of us, no matter how far we are from God, His flame burns in us. Okay? So you could be far away, and you could feel as though God has forgotten you, but there's still the flame inside you. Okay? So for Dante and for our early civilizations, God is love. Forever, okay? Eternal love. But God is also eternal compassion, eternal forgiveness. God will never forgive you. God will never forget you, okay? He will always forgive you. But you have to believe in God to return to God. You have to live a life of righteousness, of love, of compassion, of imagination, if you want to return to God, okay? So that's how the universe is set up. We are here. Our divine mission is to expand the consciousness of the universe. And we do that by embracing love and by imagining the world to be a better place. Okay? All right. So now let's go back and ask ourselves this question. If every single early religion, whether it's Taoism or Hinduism or the Egyptians or the Native Americans, if every early religion all believed this, and they all knew this, how did we come to forget or deny this with a material reality. Okay? Remember, the Big Bang, evolution, neuroscience. It's to teach us that there's no God. There's no purpose. It's all just random. It's all just material. So how do we get this to this point? Okay. The answer is very simple, and we'll be discussing this throughout throughout the rest of the semester, okay? The problem is that you have heaven, you have earth, and you have hell, okay? The heaven is spiritual, it's consciousness. Hell, it's mechanical, it's machines. Okay? We're stuck in between. It's always our choice whether to choose heaven or hell because of free will. Okay? And for most of human history, we have chosen heaven. But eventually, you had people who chose hell. And when you have to choose hell, you have access to technology. Right? And this technology allows you to conquer and control other people. Okay? But once you control and you conquer and control the people, you have to get them to obey you. If you are enlightened, if you know the truth, you know that none of this matters. We're all gonna die. So why should I listen to you? So in order for me to control you, I need you to fear death. Okay? I need you to forget God, and I need you to fear death. When you die, dying is the worst thing that can happen to you. Because remember, before people understood, death was just a part of the journey. It was a release. It was an opportunity to reset yourself and come back. Now, death is the worst thing that could ever happen to you. Okay? So how do you forget God, and how do you get people to fear death? You use science. Right? And you create theories like the Big Bang, like evolution, like neuroscience, to make people forget the divinity inside you. Right? So that's what science is for. But unfortunately, for these people, that's not enough. Because eventually, we'll all die, right? So the only way around this is by creating a new technology called transhumanism. Okay? You may have heard of transhumanism. Again, don't worry about the concept now. We'll discuss this later on the semester. But transhumanism is to surpass humanity, which basically means to defeat death. To upload you, your brain, to the internet so you're here forever. Okay? To trap you here forever. And so, now the question then is, why are they doing this? Why are people in power doing this? Okay, so, as we've discussed in this class, throughout human history, it's usually secret societies that have the power. Okay? Why? Okay. Well, last class we discussed the idea of bureaucracy, right? Mass bureaucracy. And we discussed how in a mass bureaucracy, bureaucrats don't really want to do anything. They're lazy. Well, guess what? If you're part of a secret society and you're able to coordinate secretly together, you can control the bureaucracy because you're the only people doing stuff. Okay? But then the question, but the problem is bureaucracies do not like secrets, secret societies. So you have to maintain your secrecy. And how do you do that? You do that through transgression. If you guys are doing bad things together, okay? Now you have blackmail on each other. And therefore, you're committed to keeping each other's secrets. If one of you falls down, everyone falls down together, okay? So now you're committed to maintain the secrets. But the problem is this. The problem is, okay, it's conspiracy, but the moment you're found out, they'll come and arrest you. So how do you work together without actually meeting each other? And the answer is religion. Okay? Or the word we use is eschatology. Religion is just a script, an understanding of the world that allows you to coordinate secretly. Okay? Does all this make sense? Okay. So now these secret societies, they are embedded in a mass bureaucracy, and they're manipulating the bureaucracy, and they're working together to commit transgression. And they have their own secret religion. Okay? When you combine these three together, what happens is that they're now forced to invert this understanding, inversion. Why? Because they know that they're doing evil in this world. So when they go meet God, God's going to punish them, right? So the way to get around this is, well, I will just worship someone who's superior to God, who is Satan, okay? Okay, so what they're going to do is they're going to invert this, okay? By celebrating Satan, they can now justify all their transgressions, right? As a way to empower Satan. Also, there's a fundamental weakness in the system, okay? So let's go over the three main characteristics of the system. The first is unity. Okay? So this entire system is complete and unified. Second is symmetry. Symmetry or polarity. And what this means is that if there's good, there must be evil. If there's ugliness, there must be beauty. Why? Because you cannot have one without the other, okay? One thing is meaningless without the other. That's why if you have God, you must have Satan, okay? And the third principle is as above, so below. And what this means is that everything is a reflection of each other. So you can never defeat God, but what you can do is corrupt human beings to worship Satan so that Satan becomes everything. Okay? All right. Are you guys following along? Okay? So what you're trying to do is you're trying to invert this world. And how do you invert this world? What you do is, you know that hell is material. And you know that heaven is spiritual, right? What you do is, you brainwash people to worship the material world and abandon the spiritual world. You make money, power, technology, science, the greatest things in the world. Okay? You get rid of God. You get rid of religion. You get rid of compassion. You get rid of love. And that's how you control the world. So in other words, what is happening today is a war between heaven and hell. The people in charge, the secret societies, they are interested. They must make hell into heaven and heaven into hell. They must invert the world in order to maintain their power. Okay, and that's what we'll be focusing on for the rest of the semester. This war between heaven and hell. How it came about, who are the major players, and what will happen. Yeah?
So I'm a bit confused about the part where so the secret society are manipulating their power beyond the rest of the people, and so they are devoting themselves into the power of Satan, right? But my question is, so does God and Satan, they don't interfere to our world, and so these are all just decisions made by the secret society itself.
Yep.
Okay, so if Satan now goes beyond or has the power that goes beyond God, then God wouldn't do anything to, like, rebuttal or something?
Yeah, okay, great, okay. So first thing to remember is that because of the principle of free will, God and Satan cannot interfere in this world, okay? Second is we have to remember that there are different secret societies. There are thousands of different secret societies, okay? But the secret societies that are able to use all three principles to accumulate power are the most successful, okay? So that's why they're promoting Satan. Then the third question then is, why doesn't God do anything about this? Okay? And the answer is, because if you think about it, only in time of complete darkness, only when Satan rules, can humans fully shine. Right? Does that make sense? So God has trust in us. God has faith in us. God loves us completely. God believes that someone will stand up and do the right thing. And when that person does the right thing, the universe will shine. Okay? Does that make sense? All right? So only in a time of darkness can the light truly shine. And remember, when someone shines that light is reflected in everyone else. So everyone's light shines as well. Okay? So that's the idea here. You can choose to shine if you want, but only if the world becomes really evil and dark and sinful can you have this option. Okay? Yeah, back there?
Like, is there a really a God or a Satan, but there's a God for all of it and a God for all of the bad things, or it's just two worlds, which is one positive, one negative?
Okay, that's a really good question, okay? So what all this is saying is this, okay? In reality, literally, everything is just vibrations, all right? How these vibrations work, right? No one knows, but it's all just vibrational. But what we know is we are participants in the universe. So if we all believe God exists, guess what? God exists. We all believe sin exists. Okay, that's why this war, it's not over resources, it's over perception. Do you understand? This is a war of perception. If I can get everyone in the world to believe that God is dead and Satan is a true God, I win. Okay, and how do I do that? Well, I can do that by shooting rockets up into space, by putting man on the moon and on Mars. Okay? Why? Because now I've destroyed the concept of heaven. Before, we've understood that the moon, the Mars were beyond us because they are heavenly. They're spiritual. But once I put man on the moon and on Mars and go beyond, I've proven heaven doesn't exist. I've destroyed God. I can also fake an alien invasion and pretend these aliens are Satan, okay? Okay, all of science, you don't know this, but all of science, it's not about discovering reality, it's about reinventing reality in a way that serves power. That's what science really is. Yeah?
So, is there people who, like, they don't believe in Satan or God, they choose to let others believe in them, like, they're making themselves into a God. Does it work? Like, because if you believe God, then God exists, like if everyone believes in it. So if someone make everyone believes in him or her, does it work to make him into a God or Satan, some kind of?
Okay, that's a good question, and the answer is no. Historically, what's happened is that a charismatic leader has emerged to say that I am God's representative. Okay, why? Because we believe we're all equal, right? You're no different than I. What makes you God? Well, the answer is because I'm channeling God, okay? And historically, so look at the early empires, the early kingdoms. What the kings say is that I'm descended from God. God came down, had sex with my mother, and now I'm born, okay? But that person is not saying, you know, I am God itself, but I am born of God. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So this is the basic framework for what we'll be working with the rest of the semester. Okay? But understand that what's happening today is a war between heaven and hell. If I can convince you that God is dead and Satan is the true God, if I can convince you that the material world is real, the spiritual world is a lie, if I can convince you that death is the worst thing to happen to you, and you should do all you can to live, then hell has won, okay? But what's important to understand is this system is set up so that hell can never win out. And the reason why is the entire cosmos is interconnected. So if we do evil, if we feel pain, if there's too much suffering in the world, the earth itself rebels, right? Because of vibrational energy. And this leads to things like the Great Flood, which resets the world and lets humanity renew itself. Okay? So there are all these different fail-safe systems in here to make sure that hell can never triumph. And that's why Elon Musk wants us to go to Mars, okay? All right? But understand, if you just use this concept of heaven and hell, even though it's metaphorical, even though God and Satan are just projections of our imagination, they do help us understand the world better. Okay? Okay. So any questions? Any more questions before we conclude for today? Great. Okay. So we'll continue this tomorrow, Friday. Yep. Okay.